Good afternoon and welcome to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. My name is Dan Yassine. I'm an anti-empire and anti-war activist. Mike Rhodes is at the control. Today is December 21st, 2016, third Wednesday of the month. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30, I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military-industrial surveillance security complex. These actions have severe consequences for the people all over the world. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Jeff Brown on telephone from a suburb of Beijing, China with us. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Dan. How are you doing?
We are doing wonderful here, and thank you for being my guest on the show. Jeff Brown is an author and a blogger who currently lives in China. Jeff grew up in Oklahoma. He received a BS from Oklahoma State University and an MS from Purdue University. He has also lived in Brazil, Middle East, Africa, and France. His latest book is China Rising: Capitalist Roads, Socialist Destinations, The Truth Behind Asia's Enigmatic Classes. In 2012, he took a solo trip through China for 44 days and wrote a book, 44 Days Backpacking in China. His website is www.44days.net. In your latest book, China Rising, you write that to understand China, one has to understand the West and 500 years history of European and American imperialism. You explain how deep state works to control people at home and abroad. Define deep state for our audience. How does it work, and what are some of the tools it uses?
If I could just go back a little bit in history, Dan, the deep state developed over decades and decades, and I think it's safe to say it started in the 1880s with the big steel and railroad conglomerates, the massive concentration of capital into the hands of a few rich people. 1908 was the establishment of the FBI. 1913 was the establishment of the Federal Reserve Bank system, which guaranteed the indebtedness of American citizens into perpetuity. And then, of course, there were the two world wars, which, in spite of what we learn in the history books, were actually wars of empire. About how the European and American empire, the Western Empire, was going to cut up and divvy up and steal the resources of the rest of the world. And then and I think it was June 26th, 1947, basically established the deep state and legalized it and codified it. And it is made up of the rich capitalists of Wall Street, the military, the spies, the spooks, and a very, very important part is, of course, a very compliant and censored and propagandized mainstream media. On that day in 1947, Harry Truman signed the National Security Act, and that created the CIA, that created the Department of Defense, that created the National Security Council, the four branches of the military, and I think it is safe to say that on that day in 1947, that was the beginning of the end of of the ideals that the United States harbors about itself as far as being a functional democracy. And we have seen since then America's slow slide into sort of a neo-fascist police state, and it's hard to accept. And it took me years to overcome this. I was brainwashed as a child from the 50s and 60s. I mean, we all are, about the shining white temple on the hill and the perfection of American democracy. And it was so discouraging, but after thousands and thousands of hours of research over years and writing these two books, I just realized that this is true. I mean, we, our president is not the last independent president we had was John F. Kennedy, and he was shot by his own people. And then just recently I found a really interesting article confirmed by two different people who were there, that in 2013 Obama was at a fundraiser with wealthy benefactors, and they were really riding him about how he did not follow through on his promises, all these the 100-point platform he had before he got elected. And he snapped and he said, Don't forget what happened to Martin Luther King Jr. And so that's basically the first time we have a president who has admitted that he is worried about being killed, because if he doesn't follow the directives of the CIA, the deep state, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Wall Street, the oil bankers, if he doesn't, then he is going to risk assassination. And it's interesting that just last week, or just this week, in fact, Donald Trump said that he is going to hire a private security detail to take care of him and protect him, side by side with the U.S. Secret Service, because the Secret Service was directly involved in helping to make sure that the assassinations of Robert Kennedy and John F. Kennedy succeeded. So this is the deep state. It's nasty. George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush's father, was a CIA director, and he called them the crazies in the basement. But and that's funny and it's cute, but the fact is, we, as a result of this deep state that is controlling they've corrupted the legislature, the federal legislatures, and as they have amassed more and more wealth up to the 1%, they are now controlling state legislatures. The judiciary is corrupt, and so I'm sorry to say to your fans out there in the valley, but we live basically in a Potemkin democracy in the United States, and it's all a bit of a show, and our votes don't really count for much because it's all very corrupted by this group of people who legally function, thanks to the National Security Act of 1947.
Okay, since its independence in 1949, China has had many leaders, but the three leaders you write about who brought revolutionary changes, which has made China the fastest growing economy in the world. The leaders I'm talking about are Mao Zedong, Deng Xiaoping, and Xi Jinping. Tell us about how they accomplished this modern day miracle after the century of humiliation.
Yes, there is so much propaganda because China is a communist country. There is so much propaganda against anything over here in the West. The highly organized and anti-communist, anti-China propaganda. It's really, really hard to see the truth. But the fact of the matter is, from 1949 to 1978, what I call the Mao era, The economy grew incredibly well. And during that same time period, the United States during that time period had 50% of the world's GDP, the absolute reserve currency of the world, the manufacturing base of the world, the largest creditor in the world, and it averaged 8% growth a year. During that same time period, China, which was absolutely devastated after 100 years of turmoil and colonialism and Western imperialism and war, they were shut off from the West. They had no financing, no technology, no trade with the West. They were blockaded, just like the United States is still doing to Cuba to this day. And in spite of all that, and being completely shut off from the rest of the world, even the Soviet Union after 1960, the economy in China during that same time period grew almost 7%. So it's just unbelievable what Mao Zedong was able to do. And the economy exploded, infrastructure exploded, education exploded during the Cultural Revolution. Research exploded. The only reason that Deng Xiaoping was able to implement his reforms in 1978 to 1980 is because of the fact that the Mao Zedong era created a platform of infrastructure, development, education, technology, etc. If that hadn't have happened, all those roads and railroads and airports and everything else that was dams, irrigation systems, reservoirs, on and on and on. If all of that was developed back during the Mao era, so it was on that Deng was able to piggyback the success from 1978 to 2012. Basically, during that period, Deng said, okay, we're trying to achieve pure capitalism. According to Marxist-Leninist theory, we need to go through a rich period, of capital development in order to reach pure communism. We never had that chance because we were an agrarian country from the start. And so, keeping in Marxist-Leninist, economic terms, the Deng reforms borrowed capitalist tools, as a description, tools or ideas, some market ideas, basically keeping the major heavy, the large industries, the airlines, the telecommunications, steel, coal, transportation, on and on and on, avionics, etc., chemicals, shipping, all that was kept in the hands of the government, owned by the people, the banks, the insurance companies. They're all 100% owned by the government even today, and they still will be. But then freeing up, the mom and pop shops, the small entrepreneurs, the small businesses, the small, a retail, wholesale, local distribution, etc. And it has been a fantastic experiment, and it has worked very successfully because of this communist long-term planning, the five-year plans, projecting, setting numbers, and shooting for them. And as a result of all this that happened since 1949 up until today, China has lifted about 700 million people out of poverty. It is it's unprecedented in human history. And so what has happened is in 2012, she got elected. Xi Jinping was elected president. And he is continuing with the reforms of Deng, but he is now also saying, we've become a little too westernized. We've become too much of a consumer, this sort of, gluttonous, Western consumer society. And he's trying to pull back, he's trying to pull the people back to Confucius. He's trying to pull the people back to the roots of Chinese civilization. and combining that with Deng's reforms. This is still a very, very communist economy. There's not one square inch of private property, of private real estate in this country. It's all state owned. And so and it's working beautifully. Xi is calling it the Chinese dream. And for him, the Chinese dream started in 1839 with the Opium Wars and the Century of Humiliation. And it is to expunge that horrific 110 years of Western empire and Japanese and Western colonialism from not from the history books, but at least that mentality and shooting towards the future. And by 2050 is when the Xi and the Communist Party here want to take China to being a rich, prosperous, socialist economy and society, and then hopefully at that point they'll be able being a wealthy socialist country, then they'll be able to transition into pure communism, which would be basically going back to the days of Mao Zedong, but instead of being poor and agrarian, being rich and industrialized and urbanized.
You're listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We are speaking with author and blogger Jeff Brown in Beijing, China. Since Obama's pivot to Asia in 2011, U.S. has started transferring a big portion of its naval power to Asia and the Pacific. It has surrounded China with over 400 military bases. It is the U.S. that is threatening China, but what we hear in the American and the Western media is that China is building military bases on the disputed islands in the South China Sea, threatening its neighbors and American interests in the region. Give us your take on this situation.
Dan, the Chinese have built fewer installations on the South China Sea islands than Vietnam, Malaysia, the Philippines. They have built a total of 44 installations on these islands. The Chinese have built 8. It is true they have really massively ramped up their infrastructure on those 8 islands. But the only reason they are doing this is because the United States is over here in their backyard in a massive way with the Blue Water Navy, literally right off their coast. This was a non-issue until 2011 when Hillary Clinton came up with this idea of the pivot, the great pivot, moving the America's Sixth Fleet from the European theater to the Middle Eastern theater, and now they're going to move 60% of America's deep water Navy right off the coast of China. And so obviously, you just imagine how you would feel, Dan, and your fans out there would feel if the Chinese moved its naval fleet or most of its naval fleet right off the coast of California. And that is exactly what the Americans are doing. And it's a shameless projection of America, of raw American imperial power. But the fact of the matter is it's failing colossally. I mean, it's embarrassing. The United States is 7,000 kilometers, 5,000 miles away from home. The Chinese have missiles that are so good now that the Americans cannot even put their aircraft carriers within 1,500 kilometers, about 900 miles of the Chinese coast, because if they did, the Chinese have missiles now that could destroy them in a matter of hours. And with the jets on those planes, the on these aircraft carriers that only have a range of 600 miles, they're useless. And so the United States is reduced to these laughable drive-bys where they sail a ship within 12 nautical miles of a Chinese island, and sending out drones that the Chinese pick up and humiliate the United States by, you know, picking up the drone and giving it back to them. So it is a massive failure. It is a massive waste of billions and billions of dollars of America's taxpayers' money. This is China's backyard. This is China's sphere of influence. And it's starting to have an impact. Duterte got elected, Rodrigo Duterte. He is rejecting, he's the first Filipino president to reject American imperialism. Najib, the prime minister of Malaysia, Thailand, just yesterday, is seeking to jointly build military equipment with the Chinese in Thailand. So here are three old doormat American client states who are now starting to stand up to Uncle Sam. So I just, let's just hope that Donald Trump, does not continue with the pivot and has the intelligence and the foresight to realize that it's just a losing game. I mean, China is going to continue to run circles around the United States over here and do whatever they want because it is their backyard. It's almost like saying, the Chinese have their navy off the coast of the United States, expecting to control the San Juan Islands, off of Seattle, and the Catalina Islands off of Los Angeles. It's not going to work for the Chinese if they even tried that, and it's definitely not working over here in Asia.
Well, you did mention Trump. I was going to ask about that because Trump seems to be playing the old age-old imperial game of divide and conquer by having friendship with Russia, but confrontational with China. So you are advising him not to do that, basically. So anything you want to add on to Trump's election?
First off, he's not working with the Department of State. He realizes it's full of Bushmen and Clintonites and so he's avoiding all this stuff's going on. He's not even contacting the Department of State until he gets his team in there because he realizes they would try to sabotage him. So he before the elections he said he wants to cut a deal, with Putin and with Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia. Now everybody knew that he wanted to warm up to Russia. And so there's two possible scenarios, Dan. First, the bad scenario is that he does warm up to Russia, and then tries to do a reverse 1960, scenario where he uses Russia to isolate and demonize, China, which back in the 60s, it was China, that helped isolate the USSR and demonize it. If he does that, he will lose grandly. First off, Russia is not going to abandon China. And if they're spending billions and billions and billions of dollars, to create an infrastructure between their two countries and with the One Belt, One Road initiative, from Portugal to Lisbon to Vladivostok and down to Singapore. So Russia, that's not going to work. And if he did try it, again, just look at the South China Sea. China has the manufacturing base, $3 trillion of foreign reserves, and a 1.4 billion population as consumers. So if Trump does try to do that, it will be a massive failure and humiliation for the United States. The other option is that he cuts a deal with both countries, and to help America bring jobs back. And there was an article last week about a glass maker here in China who's going to hire 2,500 people in Ohio. He's going to build a plant in Ohio because it's competitive for him to build his automobile windows and glass in the American market. So let's just hope that he does not try that, the divide and conquer strategy of Western Empire, and he does cut a deal with both of them. If he does, it will be wonderful, you know, for you and for me and for everybody else, and hopefully defuse a lot of this tension. The fact that he's hiring a private security detail tells me that he's obviously making the deep state very, very upset. And so that's a good sign. And let's just keep our fingers crossed that that he doesn't listen to them and works with both China and Russia for a better world for all people, including Americans, Chinese, and Russians.
With a couple of minutes left, Jeff, I want to let you know and our listening audience that I've really enjoyed reading your latest book, China Rising, Capitalist Roads, Socialist Destination, The Truth Behind Asia's Enigmatic Classes. Just in a minute and a half or so, tell our listeners about your book and how can they get this book.
Well, it's available on Amazon, Kindle right now. It will be coming out as a print book on Amazon soon. It's also on Barnes & Noble's as an ebook. So right now it's an ebook, Kindle and Nook, soon to come out as a print book. It's got 100 and almost 200 visual images, hundreds and hundreds of hyperlinks. I mean, I've done thousands of hours of research and years of experience here in China, and it's just a wonderful way for Westerners to see the world from a different and point of view, and as I said in my prologue, to see the world the way the Chinese see themselves and the way the Chinese see us and we Americans and Europeans, and you will become a real expert in having a different understanding and I think a more correct understanding than what you see on CNN and MSNBC and BBC and other mainstream outlets. So it's not expensive and it's just power packed with a ton of information, and people say it's funny and entertaining and interesting to read. So I encourage people to take a look at it. It's also available on Ganxi, GANXY.com, and so there's a lot of it. If you don't like Amazon, you can also buy it on Ganxi. And Dan, I can send you those links to put on the website.
Okay, and quickly give us your website people can go to learn more about what you do.
Yeah, it's www.chinarising.puntopress, PUNTOPRESS.com, China Rising, correct English, all stuck together, .puntopress, PUNTOPRESS.com. I do a lot of journalism. I interview people. I get interviewed by wonderful people like you. I continue to do a writing. There's a hundred and something articles on there right now. And there's a lot of information there on my website that people can go to and follow me and stay up to date on China and geopolitics and Donald Trump.
Thank you for being my guest, Jeff. Until later.
Always wonderful to talk to you, Dan, and all the best to you and your fans out there in the valley.
Thank you. You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We were speaking with author and blogger Jeff Brown in Beijing, China. My name is Dan Yassin, host of the show. Thank you for listening. I'll be back third Wednesday of next month. Happy holidays, everybody.